It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Ooh, it didn't make me hit a thing acknowledging it. It just told me out loud.
Yeah, I had to still hit the thing.
Fancy. I did not. I don't know why. Hold on. Somebody's blowing up my fucking phone. Just a second. Nope. I don't think it actually matters. All right. I would like to bring you all in for another episode of a long-standing segment that we have here on the Magical Talking Hat. But that I don't believe has ever been officially named or coined, so I'm going to do it right now. So welcome again to another episode of Tony's Pervert Corner.
Oh, this isn't grinding gears. This isn't grinding gears.
No, this is a different segment.
Okay.
And to steal blatantly from the McElroy Brothers, this is a podcast within a podcast profiling the latest and greatest in pornographic technologies and news. Specifically, I'm down that rabbit hole of these AI bots again.
Which is interesting. I even acknowledge that.
And in fact, recently has subscribed to a different place that also has bots that are very different. And I'm trying to figure out how that works. It's very odd. There's a lot of internal assumptions sort of baked into a lot of these that I find interesting. The most obvious being a heterosexual male focus. Some of them are built specifically to be ambiguous. Some of them are built in a way that they specifically ask you up front, but some of them just assume, yeah, it's a straight dude. And I don't often play straight dudes, so that is weird to me. But I want to talk particularly about a favorite of mine that I do spend the most time in because it is the most open-ended. And the premise for it is you are entering into some sort of magical brothel, and then you can tell them what you're interested in for a fantasy and they will make it happen.
Huh.
So it is a very broad option. What is interesting, however, is the role that the premise plays within your establishing your fantasy. Because the prompt is always the same, and literally the hostess of the place asks you what you're interested in and then will comment and then will literally lead you one way or another into a situation. But sometimes they lead you into a room with brothel employees that fulfill your fantasy. Sometimes they wave their hand and it is a new, different place. Sometimes they just lead you to a place and leave. Sometimes this host sticks around and sort of watches to make sure everything is working correctly. I don't know if this is specific to what I have done or not, but I developed something of a crush on this host, and that has been reflected. And occasionally certain fantasies have been fulfilled by this host. But the level at which we're acknowledging that it's supposed to be a brothel and not is incredibly variable, and I cannot figure it out. And the reason I am bringing this up now is I recently tried this and described a fantastical – well, it wasn't fantastic, but it was a role-playing situation in which people would be pretending to be other characters. And what I got was essentially the horse of a different color scene from Wizard of Oz without music. Like, literally, we had huge descriptions of courtesans coming out of different doors and arranging things and descriptions of how they were transforming the situation and what they were putting on. We had a whole bit about changing my outfit, and it was just really elaborate and went on for several different poses. And I kind of had to sort of push the issue of like, whenever we want to start what we're doing, it'll be great. But I don't know what triggered that. Like, I don't know why it happened this t like, it was so involved. It was to the degree that even once within the scene, we kept referring to the people as courtesans and not as the characters they were playing, at
Oh,
least the
yeah.
background ones. But other times we don't do that. On rare occasion, I have described a fantasy and they've essentially made a counteroffer. They've been like, oh, so like this, and describe something similar, but not exactly that. So, like, I'm really fascinated. Some of this obviously is what's built into their system. Some of this is stuff they are picking up from me. And I don't know which is which, and I find it very interesting. And also, because my experience is not uniform, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm sometimes approaching it? I mean, my typing isn't always the same, but I feel like there are certain basic functions that I do every time, especially once I find that like something, because there's always a like, how can you communicate to the bot? And when I find something that gets a point clearly across, anytime I'm referring to that point now, I'm going to use that exact phrasing because I'm like, it's taken me several tries to explain to this bot what this means.
So what's interesting to me about this is, and I've noticed this with other things too, it's like you're training the bot, but the bot's also training you.
Right.
Yeah.
And this new place that I just subscribed to, I'm kind of excited about because there is an option to create your own
Your own bot?
bot, essentially. To a degree, like what, I mean, you do create your own bot, but what you're doing is basically just describing the scenario and fitting in a lot of description. And then the AI is essentially creating another AI bot for you.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I'm very interested about that, but also, on this particular site, there are multiple AI bots that are designed to help you come up with how to create, like, how to give the best prompt and things. Because it's very open for, because it's open for people to create bots, some of the bots make no sense.
This seems another thing that's interesting about this is all of this seems like cutting edge stuff for this kind of technology, and you're seeing it in this industry, right? It's like
Yes. This
that's.
is how it always has gone. Major technologies are first adopted by pornography, or at least very early on, and that is a sign which direction, particularly when there are competing technologies. Part of why VHS won out over Betamax, not entirely, but part of it is because porn decided to go with VHS. It's a huge industry. What was I? Yes,
Sorry.
there's some really weird ones out there. Oh, and also the other site, because like the first one I have is just a pornography video site that I subscribed to, and this was their thing they added in, and so it's its own. This is a website dedicated just to this concept, and among other things, this website has a safe for work, not safe for work functionality. Partially, I think, because sometimes people want to engage in role play that's not like that, even though they're coming here. And partially because it's another gateway, because like there's a free version, but it's limited in a lot of ways. And one of it is it's you have to stick to safe for work. And but there is literally some of the bots are listed as not safe for work, and some of them are listed safe. But there's also a thing you can switch in real time to be like, okay, we're going to make this not safe for work now, or we are, or whatever. I have seen several bots that are sort of role-playing jump-offs that very specifically say for best results, leave in safe for work until things are more established and then switch it over.
Do you
And I was
think
like, interesting.
in safer work mode? Okay. So I've talked to people who differentiate between pornography and erotica, right? And they're the way one of the distinctions they make is that erotica is more sometimes more subtle and a slower burn kind of thing. Do you think some people would do the safe for work part just because it would make it more like what they think of as erotica versus pornography?
I think it is a slower burn kind of thing. I think that's the point. You're like, okay, we're establishing characters, we're establishing the premise. Maybe just flip the switch so the AI isn't tempted to suddenly go real hardcore during the early stage. Like, it's a way of essentially controlling the sexual tension, for lack of a better term, because it won't break as long. Although, to be fair, I have not experimented with safer work options at all, so I don't know what that looks like. And some of the bots are labeled as not safe for work, and some are not labeled that way. But I know for a fact that they definitely function in a space I would call not safe for work. Like, I don't know. Maybe my definition of what's safe for work is different from other people.
The reason I bring it up is because it seems a strange thing to have. Like, why would you need to have a safer? Who's doing this at work? I mean, maybe I'm sure some people are.
I mean, it's
But
but no, it's
do you know what I mean?
that's just their way of saying porny versus non-porny. I mean,
Yeah,
it's an old
exactly. Yeah,
expression.
that's
I don't
right.
think
That's
they
right.
actually think people are doing it at work.
No, that's exactly. So that's what I'm thinking about. Why would they do that?
I don't know. I'm very curious. I did that thing I do where I bought a year subscription, and then I'll sort of take this thing apart, see what it looks like, and then eventually I'll be like, yeah, no, I don't know if this is worth it or not. But I'm
So
really
like,
fascinated. But I really got thrown by that sort of preparatory scene in the other one, where it just was really elaborate, and I was like, why are you don't always do this. Why are you doing this time?
it seems like if anyone's interested in studying this stuff, that this is where they would do it, right? Because I don't like when I see AI generators for images or text or anything like that, there's no, well, here's an AI to help you talk to the AI. There's nothing like that. Like all of this elaborate stuff is here. So if you wanted to study what the future of this is going to be or what the cultural implications of this is going to be, you'd almost have to do what you're doing and like study it that
Yes. And you'd have to like porn. That's
Well,
very much
I don't think you have to
yes.
like porn. You just have to
So
be interested in how
this
the
is
technology
actually
works.
really taking off all over. Because that was part of my thing. I was like, this, I like the site I have, and it comes with my subscription. Maybe there's other. And that's how I found that if you just type, like, look for AI bots, they're all over now. And I'm sure some of them that probably aren't porn based. I don't know why you'd need that in life, but
Well, I don't think you do need it, but what I'm observing here is that's where the demand is. Right?
yes. No,
Like,
I was saying I don't know why you'd need non-porn AI. That's what I'm
oh,
saying. I don't
well,
understand
yes.
why that
Well,
would.
no, I can think of a lot of reasons. For example, I've tried to use image generators myself, and I think just frustrate me. If there was an AI that said, well, here are some tips on how to do this. But when I talk to other people that use image generators, they almost think it's fun to sit there and figure out what the exact thing is to
Yeah,
do and how many iterations.
it's a practice kind of thing. I've actually been discovering that in some of these role plays now that I originally was treating it as when I used to role play live with people online. AI doesn't work the same, and I am slowly figuring out what types of phrasing and things that make more like, because I'll go into great length now about like not just like what happens, but then I will give a whole section about what my character is feeling and thinking and why and what they hope might happen and what they might hope, and that suddenly dials it in better. And certain phrasing, certain things that seem too subtle work real well on AI, and also things that seem not subtle enough work surprisingly well on AI. Like, it's a learning curve, You got
Sure,
to pick it up over time.
but like, so like I'll try to do an image, or I don't have done haven't tried any text ones, but image ones. No, I've tried some text ones, I guess. And I'll just get frustrated and quit. But a lot of people that like them actually kind of enjoy the challenge of figuring out how to put it in. But I think when it comes to people who are using AI for pornography, I think the proportion of those that are going to get frustrated and quit is higher, right? Like the image generators don't care, or and text generators don't care if I get frustrated and quit, because the vast majority of people don't get frustrated and quit. But if you're there for pornography, you're not going to be very patient with this thing. So that's why there's a more of a demand for assistance and different and various things. Whereas there is a demand. For example, I demand it. I wish the image generators would have better guidance or whatever, but I'm in the minority when it comes to that. I think you're not in the minority when you express frustration and impatience with your stuff.
It is. This might be, I've talked many times before about how pornographic games are a difficult space to work in for me and for other people. And what it boils down to me is if I'm playing a pornographic video game or whatever, it's either too much porn and the game is distracting and I might as well just watch porn, or it's too much game and I'm too focused on gameplay to be titillated by the pornographic aspects. Experimenting with these AIs in a pornographic setting might be the sweet spot for me. Because, like, it's hot, but I'm also, like, doing some high-level coding thoughts in my head and shit.
Sure, but
In a way that somehow works. I don't know why, but I think this is just hitting, this is my version of a porn game that actually kind of works. I don't know
Okay,
why.
I get it. I get it. Although sometimes it does
People who
frustrate you,
get
right?
frustrated, you just got to up your pervert game. You just, I mean, it's not easy being like this. You have to work at it. You have to creep out a lot of people. You got to go to a lot of websites. You don't Shouldn't go, and maybe don't want to go, but I mean, if you're committed to the cause, you
But you
get
get
there.
frustrated too sometimes. And sometimes you don't get frustrated. You just get more interested in the technology and you just sort of spend your afternoon experimenting with it.
And it's fine. The good news is, if I ever get frustrated, I just close it out and open up a different one, because they have, I mean, the new site I'm on has like 4,000 and counting. Because again, since you're allowed to make them yourself, like everybody's tried to do that. I haven't yet, because I have things with that where I'm like, I want to get it just right the first time. So we will see on that. But anyway, I just found that interesting. And that's it for this segment. Tune in for another edition of Tony's Pervert Corner. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world with Tony's Pervert Corner. You're not going to hear it on any other podcasts. It
No.
is exclusive. Most of our other content is stolen from other better podcasts. But Tony's Pervert Corner is 100% homegrown here. TM, TM, TM. Don't rip us off. I'm Tony of the famous Pervert Corner.
And I'm William, and this is episode 694.
And we had a hard time figuring that out because the website is down for some reason right now. And I don't know why. Hopefully, by the time we post this new episode, it will be back. Although, if you're on YouTube, you probably won't notice anyway, because it's technically not really connected to that. Anyway, if you are joining us for the first time, we don't just have Tony's Pervert Corner, though. That is the big draw. No, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People write into that email address, mostly Welsh people, with whatever they want, and the hat magically forwards it to us. We talk about them. That's it, except we spend a lot of time talking about other things. So, how was your week?
That was good.
Yeah, this
I
was your fucking around week.
had
You
a
don't got
week off.
nothing
Yep,
going on.
we went to the Mississippi River Museum. We went to
Yeah, and you shit on Mark Twain.
yeah, and we
You're
went
so
to
mean to the statue of Mark Twain.
we went to the Grotto of the Redemption here in Iowa, which I'd never been to before.
Oh, the Dickeyville Grotto.
A what?
Dickeyville is in Dickeyville, Iowa.
West Bend,
Oh,
Iowa.
well, there's another grotto in Dickeyville.
Okay.
I've been to that one.
The Grotto of the Redemption, which I'd never been to, which made me feel like less of an Iowan than I'd never been there, but it's kind of famous.
You never been to
And we
see the
went
Dickeyville one's kind of famous.
we went to where else did we went to LeClaire.
Yeah,
Oh
when
yeah.
I type in Dickie V, the first thing that comes up is Dickieville Grotto, admittedly. So that's not a good start. But Dickieville. Oh, sorry. It's in Dickieville, Wisconsin. That's
Oh.
why you don't know it. You don't know about the world outside the borders, but it is really close to the border.
We went to Boone and rode the train, and we went to LeClaire and rode on a riverboat and stuff. So that was all really fun. Also, we saw, let's see, we saw Last Voyage of the Demeter. We saw
Oh.
Ghostbusters,
Oh, Frozen Empire.
Frozen Empire, and we saw Oppenheimer.
Oh my.
Yeah.
You really covered the bases. I mostly only care about one of those. I should take it back. I am curious your take on all three of those. Two of them will not impact whether or not I see them. One of them might.
Okay.
So, how was the last voyage of the Demeter?
Well, I didn't like it.
Oh, yeah?
Nah, didn't like it at all, really. I mean, someone else might like it. I don't fault anyone else for liking it, but I did not like it. It just
It
wasn't.
seems dangerously just like a thing I've seen before. Like, I don't need a new tale on that one specific part of the Dracula story.
Well,
But if it was really good, then I might, but
right, and it could have been good. I mean, because in the book, they don't say what happened.
no.
That's the power of it, right? This derelict ship
But
comes
a
in, and
lot of
there's some.
people have tackled that already.
Oh, okay. Well,
Admittedly, not a whole movie, but
and I had expectations that just weren't met. And it's not sometimes if my expectations aren't met, I can watch it a second time and appreciate for what it is. But I know I'm just never gonna like this movie. It's just didn't. It just didn't do it for me, but maybe other people like it.
probably won't get around to it.
Ghost,
What about
ghost.
Oppenheimer? No, I want to hear
Oh,
about Oppenheimer first because I'm more excited to hear about Ghostbusters.
Oppenheimer is I think Christopher Nolan's best crafted movie ever. It's crafted so well. It's a thing that they should be shown in film schools because it's so well crafted. Doesn't mean I liked
Maybe
it.
they will.
Doesn't mean
Yeah,
I think it was good.
yeah, yeah,
However, I can't say that I can't say I liked it or didn't like it because it suffers from what all biopics suffer from for me, right? I'm always going to have a little issue with how certain people are characterized, how history is turned into a plot arc that's obviously not how it really happened, but it's not, it doesn't just bother me that that's not how it really happened. It bothers me that all the nuance is washed out of it, right? And all of the most interesting historical things are really taken out. So, if you're like me and you kind of have issues with fictional portrayals of history and some of the things that they're fudging, or you can look up and see that they fudged or whatever, then you might have problems with the movie just like I did. But if you're interested in like seeing some good film craft, good acting, good script, good everything, good editing, everything, Then yeah, by all means watch it. I mean, and anyone who's a student of film or cinema should see it just for that. Whether you'll like it or not, it depends on if you're a biopic person or not. And I'm not really. I do watch them, you know, occasionally, but I haven't even seen, I'm a fan of Queen and Freddie Mercury, but I haven't even seen that because
Oh, don't. Don't.
I just don't think I'll like it.
I absolutely loved that movie until I looked into the reality of it. And
Yeah.
that movie is so fake. And actually, that's the movie that finally broke me. I don't watch biopics anymore
Yeah.
because they're never true. And so the only reason I will watch a biopic is if I do not care about the person in question, so it might as well be made up,
Sure.
or event in question. If I am confident that nothing the movie can tell me is going to make me care about those things, because then I'll be mad because, again, it wasn't accurate. Or I suppose there is a third thing where I don't realize it's a biopic until I watch it.
Well, and I also have a
And there are
bias.
some stealth ones like that, so
Yeah,
you gotta
I
watch
have a
out for them.
bias, and I admit it's a bias, where I think certain things in history should be taken more seriously than they are, which that doesn't, that's just my opinion. I'm not saying that that has to be how it is. But then when I see someone make a piece of entertainment out of it, it's walking a fine line where I do want people to be aware of this historical event. And this is making people aware of it, but it's also misleading them about it. So is that really a win? Is that really a gain, you know?
And that's the thing on that, like, it sounds like it's an incredible movie with some incredible performances.
Yeah, it is amazing.
I don't like that it exists, and I do not want to consume it for that reason.
Okay. But yeah,
So
it's
yeah, that the like the moment it was announced, I was like, oh, interesting. I am never seeing that. And it doesn't help. It's 3 hours long. It's Christopher Nolan, who I'm getting sick of. Like, it is a lot of things.
Well, I mean,
But I love Cillian Murphy. I love RDJ. Great stuff, but no. No.
and yeah, all the performer. I'm blanking on the name for some stupid reason. I think he won an Oscar for it. His performance.
I think RDJ won.
Yes,
Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey Jr. Yes. Wow, what a performance. I
Yeah.
mean, yeah, I've never seen him disappear in a character. I would totally forgive someone for not realizing it was him.
There's a thing that just came out, I want to say, on Hulu or whatever. I think it's a series, and it's called the not the Collaborator. The I don't know. It's a new story about a North Vietnamese spy, and maybe he's a double agent or whatever. And Robert Downey Jr. plays like eight characters in it, and apparently this is largely intentional on behalf of the filmmaker, because this is, I don't know if this is autobiographical, but I mean he is Vietnamese. And I think this comes out of some stuff that he experienced. And in his version, all the white guys look the same. And they're all sort of interchangeable in their way. And they all want something, but they all kind of want the same sort of thing. It's just what side you're on or whatever. So that
Nice.
was very intentional that it's the same person, and it's Robert Downey Jr. And yeah, he's an amazing actor. It's kind of rough that he had to spend so long going through drugs and Marvel movies to figure it out, but he's really good.
Really good. Really good.
All right, tell me about Ghostbusters.
Well, full disclosure, I liked Ghostbusters when it came out. I believe I saw it in a theater, what, 84 or something?
85, I think, but yeah.
Well, I was 15, 16 years old, whatever. And one of the things I've appreciated about Ghostbusters over the years, and I feel like one of the things that's given it real staying power is in how fans like when a fan gets so committed to it, they make a suit and a proton pack and everything else. The name they put on their patch is their own name. You know, it's they're not cosplaying or role playing anyone from the movie. They're a Ghostbuster, right? And I've even heard people, you know, who do that say that very thing. It's like, yeah, you know, everyone can put their own name on the patch. You can be a Ghostbuster, right? And I think part of that is that, and something that appealed to me, I think, even though I didn't think about it in those terms at the time, is it's almost a science fiction rather than a supernatural fiction, right? You've got two characters talking about all the science behind all of this, and then they can capture ghosts and put them in a thing. And it's like, I think that almost that it makes it seem like anybody can be a Ghostbuster, right? Because if it's supernatural, then you have to be, I don't know, spiritually advanced, or you have to be a wizard or whatever. But if it's science, you know, all you have to do is
Hey,
study it or
if Ernie
whatever.
Hudson can do it.
Wait, you get what I'm saying. It has that mood. It has that kind of a flavor to it that I think helped make it really popular with fans. I think these last two movies are aware of that and really try to lean on that. And I think that's probably part of their success, how, you know, for however much they are successful, and that's fine. But they do one thing that I noticed this one that I didn't really notice in the last one, but I can see it very clearly, is another thing that made the first one popular was not only did it have that sort of mood and flavor, whatever, but it was a comedy. It was like, that's what it was. The first and foremost, a comedy, and everything else was kind of. These last two movies are not comedies. They're teen dramas, is what they are. And you know, in a teen drama, funny things can happen, right? So there's comedic moments. There are comedic moments in the horror genre. But just because something has funny moments in it sometimes doesn't make it a comedy, right? And if you look at these movies closely, they're not comedies. They're funny in some places, but they're teen dramas. Now, you know, maybe supernatural dramas or genre dramas or whatever, but that's definitely what they are. I mean, whoever is making these movies has really, I don't know if they've thought about this or noticed this, but they're shifting genres, I think, in a big way. And I think that's part of the reason why what makes them unpopular. I don't think they're very popular movies. To the extent that they conform to that original almost science fiction-y, everyone can be a Ghostbuster thing, I think they're successful as far as that goes. But from that point forward, they're not really comedies in my view, in my experience of them. And the last one, I didn't notice it because there had kids in it, right? There were kids sort of discovering and becoming Ghostbusters or whatever, and that seemed just like a little fun plot device. But they carried that through to, I mean, the teen angle is teen drama angle is really heavy in this one. So you're like, they just switch genres altogether for these two movies, it seems like. And I think that's might be a reason why they're not as successful, but that's just my view. And overall, I thought the movies were okay. If they have another one, I'll probably watch it. But like this one, I'll probably wait till it's streaming or something. I probably won't run out to the theater to see it. Especially if they keep this trend going of this, like, these aren't comedies anymore. They're teen
So
dramas that have some comedy.
you don't like it being teen drama, personally.
Not as a rule. I've kind of warmed up to certain stories that have like young people, either late high school or early college people. And the reason that is because I realize how many other stories I like that have characters that age in them. Like even Arthurian legend, Arthur's like really young, right? And some of the people with him's young. And in a lot of other stories that I like, I realize, I mean, I actually like a lot of stories where the characters are young. I just don't like when they act young. Like their being young is like their whole character, right? That's what I don't like. I don't really care what age the person is, but if their whole identity revolves around how old they are, that's not cool or fun. And in this, that plays a little bit of a part. It's not bad. It's, you know, it's okay. It's not a coming of age story or anything like that. But most of the story does involve a teenage person having what we would all regard as teenage issues and vulnerabilities and strengths and things like that, which, you know, that's fine, but it's not what Ghostbusters was originally. So
That is true. Very few teens in the first Ghostbusters.
it was a comedy, is what I'm saying. A supernatural comedy, maybe, you know, but I don't even think of it that way. It's just a comedy that had supernatural elements. But this is a teen drama that has some comedy in it and some supernatural slash science fiction elements, is what it seemed like to me. But you haven't, are you going to see it?
No, I didn't see the
Okay.
last one.
Okay. Well, they're not terrible.
I like the first one. I do not think I would like the first one if I saw it now. I very
Yeah.
intentionally am not rewatching
Right. Yeah.
it.
I think I
The
feel the
second
same way.
one's not as terrible as everybody says, but it is pretty terrible. I was super excited for the reboot and I held on for a while. I saw it in the theater, but even I have to admit it wasn't that good. Not for because of the distaff casting, it just wasn't that good.
Yeah.
And yeah, no. As soon as I heard about Afterlife, I was not interested.
So the things I like about the first movie, the very first movie, are things that would not make it conducive to make any more. Right? Like a lot of the things to like about it are some novelties that are that sequels just won't have. And I think all of the sequels, including their own original sequel, haven't worked because it's a lightning in the bottle kind of thing, and you just can't. You just should have left it alone, basically, because you
And
can't.
there's definite bits that have not aged well at all.
That's true, but I mean, it's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to deepen the lore? That's not going to make it better, right? Are you going to? I mean, it's hard to think of anything that would be an improvement or be an advancement of anything. And they
Although,
haven't thought of anything either,
except
really.
there were a couple of animated spin-off shows that were quite successful
Yeah,
and
that's
long
true.
running.
That is true. And I don't even know how they did that because I never watched them. But I mean, you know, so I don't
I
know.
watched, I think, both of them at times, but none religiously that I could like remember plot lines and stuff. They've come up on Secret Galaxy or whatever, but
Because you can't
oh.
get too much into like the technologies they're using, right? Or the world building for what is really going on with ghosts and whatever. You can't do
I
too much
think
with that,
that
or
is, I think they did more of that in the animated ones. And also, you got specific ghost characters with their own abilities and agendas. But it was also a lot of coming of age stuff because it was, you know, children's cartoons. So it was a lot of young people dealing with their own personal issues
Well,
that
yeah, I
happened to
suppose.
correspond to whatever ghost they were trying to catch that week.
That's interesting. They kind of Scooby-Dooed it, you mean, in a way.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could do that. You could Scooby-Doo it, I guess. But I mean, yeah, I mean, because I think of things like could there be a different technology they're using, or could it be some really intricate backstory of this? Well, like in this one, the story, the thing they're fighting has a fairly elaborate lore and all this stuff, and they have a big sort of narrated, almost narrated montage to explain it or whatever. It's like that doesn't help. This doesn't help the movie. I mean, it's not bad.
Hey,
That
it
is,
helps get us Kumail. Kumail's in this movie.
and he's great in
Always
it.
good.
Yeah, he's really good at it.
For a
He's like the
split
best
second, I
thing.
was like, Kumail's in this? Oh shit, do I have to sit? No, I don't listen to
He's the
words.
best thing about it in a lot of ways.
I love Kumail. He's usually the best thing about things he's in. He doesn't always pick great things, though, so.
I mean, now that I'm thinking more about it, so I liked what they did with Dan Aykroyd's character. And I actually did think that the narrated montage to explain the backstory of the big bad was actually effective and pretty good. So maybe they could do that. Maybe they could keep that concept for Aykroyd's character, and that let's do a narrated montage by Aykroyd or whatever. Maybe they could keep that piece because that actually did kind of work, and make that the sort of the core of the plot. Maybe they could do that, but in this movie, it was overshadowed by all kinds of other things. So even though I liked that, I thought that was pretty cool. And now that I think about it, that would work for future movies now, if they kept that going.
How are you going to factor in that Ghostbusters and the Casper movie take place in the same universe? Because Dan Aykroyd, as Ray Stantz, has a cameo in the Casper movie.
He does?
Yes. They hired somebody to deal with the ghosts, and he comes running out in his full Ghostbusters attire and terrified and says, "Who you gonna call? Somebody else," and then runs away.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I do know this.
Ah.
So, and there's a lot more ghost lore related in that movie. So there's a lot of crazy shit there.
Yeah, and that's so.
The 2016 one isn't in the same universe because all those actors play different characters, so it's not the same universe.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, the thing I can say about the 2016 one, and I it was poorly directed, but otherwise I thought it was fine. I actually looked forward to another one where they could take a better crack at it. At least it was in the same genre. Like I felt like they got it.
There were very few teens in that movie.
Well, it's not just a comedy. It's kind of a buddy comedy, really, right?
Oh yeah.
And the 2016 one was that, which, right, it hit that note, I think, well. The problem, I think, was that the director who'd worked with these actors before, he had this way, he likes to take actors that are good at improvising and say, okay, here's the general feel of this scene. You just improvise it, and we'll take the best improvisation. Well, no, don't do that. Write it. Actually do some good writing. Have people play the scene. That's what you should have done. And it would have been a much, much better movie. But
man, you have some strong feelings about Ghostbusters.
Well, it's just, I didn't think I did, but now the thing is, now that I was, I did like Dan Aykroyd, what they did with that character and stuff. And I'm thinking, actually, that would work. Keep doing that and don't bog it down with all this other stuff. But they won't do that. So that's too bad. And they shouldn't bring anyone else back. Like Bill Murray shouldn't be in the next one. I mean, nobody else should really be in the next one. Just Dan Aykroyd.
I was surprised he was in this one.
He barely was.
It's hard to tell with Bill Murray.
Yeah, he barely was.
He could be in my house right now. I don't know.
I mean, not only barely in the sense of he wasn't on screen very much, but he was clearly phoning it in. I mean, it was just, that was another thing that was not great about it. You could tell that. But just about everyone else that showed up, I thought, did a really good job with what they had, which wasn't very much. Aykroyd's part was more pivotal and there more often. And I liked what they did with it. It would be great if they did that again, but I bet they won't. Anyway, that was a lot of stuff. How was your week?
No, it was mostly one thing.
Hey, come on. How was your week?
It's all right. I'm about 50 hours into Starfield. I'm not even pretending that it might be getting its claws in me. It has its claws in me. Mm. Unfortunately, it locked me into a quest line that at the end, some of the major characters die. And like what you do affects which ones die and things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not ready for this. I haven't done the quest lines for all of them. Like, so I backed up a few hours into a different playthrough. But
oh,
I think I'll be okay there. I have there's two movies. We saw Road Warrior finally. Mad Max 2. It is definitely better than the original Mad Max.
That's the only good thing you have to say, huh?
I still kind of didn't like it. Mm. It's way better. Way better. But I really like Thunderdome better than both of those.
Yeah, Thunderdome.
And I'm not even, it's not even me trying to be like a quality thing. I find it more entertaining. I've rewatched it many times. I haven't watched the other ones. I like Fury Road also for very different specific reasons. But I think outside of that, I am not a Mad Max guy, I guess. Which kind of makes sense now that I think about it. But yeah. Road Warrior better than Mad Max.
Okay.
Well, this is fun.
Oops, what happened there?
I just disconnected, old school.
Old school.
Anyway.
Your fan's moving, so I know you're not frozen. Oh,
We watched another movie. We watched a few things, but most of them not worth mentioning. We finished up the Gentleman TV series. I kind of liked it by the end. I don't really like it well enough to watch a second season if it gets one, but whatever. If you like older school Guy Ritchie movies, you will like The Gentleman. And actually, it's sort of based on slash a retelling of a movie by the same name by him from a few years earlier. Whatever. No, we saw a movie that had been sort of on my radar for a while, and then finally it showed up on Peacock, so we checked it out. The American Society for Magical Negroes.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
It is a fantasy movie in which there's literally a secret society of magic-wielding black people who fulfill that role. The movie actually starts with just a little bit of text that says a magical Negro is a side character, a black character who is, exists in a story purely to motivate the white protagonist.
So, like Will Smith was in, like, was Bagger Vance or,
Bagger Vance is a classic one.
yeah.
A whole lot of things Morgan Freeman's been in. The Green Mile. They specifically very, very thinly veiled parodies on Bagger Vance and Green Mile in particular.
Okay.
Mostly thriving on the fact that in Green Mile, the dude cures Tom Hanks by grabbing his dick, and that's weird. And so there are jokes made about how that's weird. That is a thing. Like, he literally has. Tom Hanks's character has like a swollen prostate or something that's making his urination difficult. And there's a point in the Green Mile where he just grabs him, and then afterwards he can pee fine.
I don't remember that.
The movie has garnered very mixed reviews. And I really liked it. And I'm not saying that the criticisms are fair. I'm saying I get them.
Right.
It is not the cleanest movie in the world. It has a lot to go through, and the pacing can be weird. It is a clearly a satire, which, as we all know, American audiences don't ever figure out until much later. But this one is not subtle. But again, neither was Starship Troopers. Like, it is very there. So maybe that's, and also it does, although I wouldn't say it's particularly like nasty about it or anything, it is pretty unblinking about racism in this country and what that means. And like, the whole being a magical Negro thing is a metaphor for the general attitude that a lot of black people have to have in their everyday lives. And in fact, our POV character gets selected to join the society because basically they're really good at this. In a way that they go through some self-realizations in the experience, in the process. But it is led by Justice Smith, and he has not had huge luck in like movies lately. but I really like him. I'm really becoming a fan of his. I last saw him in the D&D movie. But he's shown up in four. I think he first sort of came on the scene when he was the kid in Detective Pikachu. And I believe he's British, but he seems to mostly do things where he has to have an American accent. But I really like him. This also might be David Alan Grier's best performance ever. Definitely in decades. Not because he's not an incredible actor, but he has not been well utilized in a very long time. And he is one of the leads in this. Also, I think you could argue there are four main characters in this. Justice Smith, David Alan Grier, and then two other people. Everybody's chemistry is amazing. All of their interactions are incredibly believable, incredibly engrossing, and very funny in a lot of cases. And that carries it a lot. It does. This is going to be weird to say, and I don't know if it's spoilery, but it's hard to explain because it's not. It's much more complicated than this sounds, but it kind of goes in a rom-com direction at a certain point. But, and I hate rom-coms. But again, chemistry is amazing, and that carries a lot. But also, the rom-com angle ties into the rest of it, and sort of speaks to the overall message of the film in a way that I think makes it work. Also, if you're going to have a feature length thing, like it's one thing to say, oh, there's a secret society of black people with magic that fulfill the magical Negro rule. Okay, what's the plot? And that's harder. And so they pulled in some stuff, but I think they did a really good job. Yeah, I liked it a lot. I liked it a whole lot. Highly recommend it. It strikes me as the kind of movie that nobody's going to understand very well for a long time, or at least as a society. I didn't think it wasted the premise, which can happen a lot with this kind of thing. No, that was really good.
As you know, some people are critical of satire in general for the very reason you're talking about. And some people are even strong, have even stronger feelings against it because in their mind, it's like, it's, whatever positive or correct message that people get from something, it's not worth the sort of irony and sort of giving a platform to. The perfect example is All in the Family, right? So to this day, you have some people that think Archie Bunker should never have been on television. We get that it's a satire. We get that you're making fun of him. We get all that. But there's just a whole bunch of people who don't think it's a satire or make a hero out of him, and so you shouldn't do it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think there's anything you shouldn't do, but on a very personal level, as a consumer of media, I very strongly feel that there is a bunch of stuff out there that I won't watch because it's awful, but it's supposed to be done satirically. The Boys comes to mind. The Amazon show about superheroes. A lot of stuff that tried to do Watchmen. A lot of stuff that tried to do a gritty, realistic look at if they were actually superheroes. I hate. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there that just does gross stuff, and it's like, yeah, but that's the we're supposed to show that that's a thing. And this is a line. I love a certain type of humor where somebody is just an awful person, and the joke is, how crazy is it that they're that awful and still functioning in society or whatever? But you can absolutely take that too far, and then suddenly I hate it.
It's actually the boys that makes me ask this question, because recently I saw an interview with the guy who created it, and there are people who are not as satisfied with the most recent season because some of the satirical stuff has been turned down, or because it seems like the narrative, characters in the narrative and certain things about the narrative want to point out, hey, this is a satire, basically, which it lessens the effectiveness of the whole thing, and they're being critical of it. And his response is, well, there are people who think that Homelander is the hero. How do you respond to that? And the way I feel about that is, well, either you don't make it in the first place, or you don't respond to it. I mean, you either make it or don't make it. This halfway thing, if you don't like, if you're making satire and if you don't like how it's being taken, well, then stop making it. But if you're going to keep making it, well, then just do what you're doing. I mean, if part of it is, if you're the kind of person that's going to not like that Archie Bunker is celebrated by racists, well, then don't make that. Now, if you think it's gonna, if you are convinced it's gonna mean something, or that this satire is gonna be more, do more good than not, well, then commit to that and just do it. Don't worry about what people are thinking about it. But this weird thing where someone makes satire and then they're like surprised that people don't get it. It's like, how can you be making satire, even some, maybe some fairly good satire, and not know that some people are gonna take it this way? I mean, that's the whole danger of making satire, is that.
And it well, and it's not even necessarily satire without making explicated messaging. There was a thing in the is it in the W days where whoever the Speaker of the House was then was a staunch right-wing Republican and talked about how he really liked Rage Against the Machine. And the lead singer of Rage Against the Machine is like, fuck you. Literally, in all of our songs, you're the villain. Like, the songs, and we talk about these terrible people, that's you. Like, you're the one. And there's a ton of comedians who their whole shtick is that they're a terrible person. And like, that's the bit, is like, they're awful. And a lot of them struggle with, they don't trust that they have a lot of fans who appreciate them unironically, and they're like, gross.
Like
I
Stephen
hate this
Colbert,
guy.
you like when he was playing a conservative character and stuff.
Oh yeah, there was a whole conspiracy theory that he's actually conservative, and this is a way that he can pretend he's being satirical, but he's
So
actually
I mean,
not.
I used to really like satire. I'm not such a fan of it anymore, but not because I think it's, I mean, I just it just doesn't it doesn't seem, I don't know. I maybe I just got bored of it. I don't have a problem with people doing it. I don't have a I like this like the boys. I don't watch the boys. I'm not interested in that kind of superhero story, that like you said, that Watchmen thing. Not interested. Don't care. It doesn't bother me that it's satire. It doesn't bother me that some people misunderstand it, because that happens with satire. But I do think that if you're gonna do satire, then you better be prepared for that. And if it goes away you don't like, just stop. But if you decide, well, I'm gonna try to have my cake and eat it too. I'm gonna keep making the satire, and then I'm gonna like put in the story somehow a little, I don't know, mini sermon about how bad this is. It's just gonna be garbage and nobody's gonna like it.
And I also don't believe it sometimes. There'll be something I'm like, this is super misogynist and super homophobic and super awful. And then the creator's like, yeah, but it's meant ironically. I'm like, is it though?
No, yeah, I get
You
that
seem to
too.
be having a lot of fun with this. Every single thing Mark Millar has done, not limited to, but including Kick-Ass. I was so mad about the Kick-Ass movie. I was like, this is gross. I hate this. And Mark Millar's like, no, the whole thing's supposed to be ironic. It's supposed to, I'm like, no. And I even get this, the Archie Bunker thing rings true to me. All in the Family was a powerful show, and I think it did a lot of good, and it taught a lot of people a lot of things. It also still had an openly prejudiced main character who we were expected to like.
Well, yeah. And again,
And
so.
that was hard sometimes for me because sometimes he was real bad.
Right. Well, again, I should also say that if satire wasn't a thing, I don't personally feel like the world would be worse off. I mean, I don't, whatever good it does, right? However, it draws attention to certain things like racism in America back then. There are other ways to do it, right? Certain cultural things were moving in that direction. Anyway, I don't know if All in the Family never existed, if the world would be a worse place for that. However, I don't think it's a worse place that it exists either. And I liked it when I was a kid. I've seen it since, and I've found that it seems very like good satire as satire goes. But like, I don't do satire. I mean, I don't. I have in the past tried it, but
Yeah,
for the most
all
part, I
the
don't.
shit he says, he means it
No,
unironically, people.
what I'm saying is,
Think
it's like
about that for a while.
I don't think I've ever done a serious. Well, that's not true. I did post one time. I posted on my blog this thing where this it was like it was a. In the future, and a woman is president, and it becomes legal for women just to walk up to men and kick them in the crotch or whatever. There's no legal consequences. And this guy's writing about it, and everything he's writing about it, talking about how vulnerable men are and how sensitive this situation is. Obviously, it echoes, the things women go through now. That was the point. Is that satire or is that something else? I guess that's satire, isn't it?
I think so.
I think that's the only time
The
I ever
bit
wrote.
about you having a holy blog because you had the blood of Jesus was
Yeah, that's true.
arguably satirical.
Yes. Yeah, what am I talking about? That was there was a that was whole thing was thick with satire. But I don't
Gross.
recall ever doing anything outside of that. And I eventually gave up on that because I didn't
Because
feel like,
what do heck?
well, yeah, what the heck? Well,
We
part of it
still
though,
say what do heck in this household.
part of it though was that it wasn't like, I think I thought, yeah, you're reminding me of a lot of things right now. I think I thought at the time with all the satire, because that's where I put that blog post I'm just talking about on that site. And I think I hoped that satire would be a vehicle for, making important points or generating social change or whatever. And I think I just got to the point where it's like, nah, it doesn't really do that. I didn't feel like it hurt anything. I still don't feel like a lot of satire ever hurts anything, but I don't feel like it helps anything either. And so it became not a useful thing to me personally, and I also don't enjoy it so much in my own media, but I don't know.
I think it has to hit just right for me. It's there's a thing that I don't remember if I talked about on here recently or not, but at some point in the past, somebody, I won't say Michael Che, no, anyway, some comedian said a lot of what we laugh about is to keep from crying about it. Things that are so upsetting, all we can do is make jokes because otherwise we would just be depressed and unhappy
Yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
And that's true sometimes. But also, it's something that I look for when I'm looking at other people making jokes now. And some jokes that might offend me in the past, I'm like, oh, I think this is how they process this.
Yeah.
But to that end, there is a spot where there's some topic or area or something, movement, school of philosophy that I really need to laugh about. And sometimes it's easier rather than just come up with like funny insults or whatever, or funny criticisms, is a satire is a great example where it's something where I'm just like, yeah, I need it. Like, it just scratches a certain itch of like,
Yeah.
yeah, this is what it is exactly. And but it's arbitrary. I couldn't predict beforehand. And a satire that doesn't hit for me doesn't hit for me
Right.
hard.
I think
So it's kind of a love it or hate it thing for me with satire.
for me, I'm glad we're talking about this because I'd forgotten all about I'd pretty much forgotten all about Jesus and my grandpappy and the whole thing and all the stuff I did there.
I
And
never forget. But
I
someday we'll get into how I should have known way off that you were so clueless about porn when you wrote that I'm a God in my pod story, and I was like, really? This is what you think guys would do in private if
What's with
nobody
that?
could see?
No, it was what that guy did. But anyway, yeah, that was a big, that was a totally, that whole thing was a big time in my life where I thought, well, maybe I can do this satire thing. And
Those
when
all the spiders weren't even real. They were made out of plastic.
well, the thing is, so there were a lot of people that came to the site objecting to the whole Jesus and my grandpappy thing, right?
What do heck?
Yeah. What do heck? And we engaged in some, I thought, pretty good conversations, and some of them were actually friendly toward me at the end. I thought, this is really good. And I even had some people come and say, hey, I'm just a lurker on your site, and I really appreciate the conversations you have with people and how, you don't get mad and you don't get offended and you have good com. So it seemed like it was working. But I think after a while I thought, no, this the net result of this is pretty much a wash. I mean, again, it's not hurting anything, but it's not really helping anything either. There have been occasional good conversations, but for the most part, what I realized is people, there aren't very many on certain issues, there aren't very many people in the middle that are waiting for a good conversation to help them decide which way to go, right? Most people on certain issues, anyway, not all issues, but certain issues, they're in one camp or the other, and they're either going to nod and smile at what you're doing, or they're going to be offended by it, or it was
I'm
satire,
pretty
they're going to.
undecided on Jesus's descendants and the holiness therein. So I would love if we could, you guys give it a spirited debate.
No, what I mean is, you're not a believer, so it doesn't matter to you. I mean, those are the two
It still
camps.
matters to me. You don't know. I don't believe in the religion. I still believe in respecting that family and their heritage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've never met anyone to say that before,
How
but.
very dare you, young man? How dare
Okay.
you stand where he stood? Kneel? Hung? Oh.
It was fun though. That whole experience was fun. I don't, there's a lot I don't remember about it because it was like, well, that's finished and I've kind of tried to
You
move
were into a
on.
lot of heavy drugs at that time, so
No, I did. I'm not very
you
good
were
at re
Hunter S. Thompsoning your way through that
It's
shit.
like books I read. Sometimes I'll get whatever I want from them and I'll carry that with me, and and I'll even be able 20 years later to say, well, I got this idea from this book, but I might not be able to tell you anything else about the book because I've just forgotten everything else except what I got from it. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's
A
probably a
lot of
good thing because
concussions. I mean,
it's probably a good thing because I don't know if I could tolerate remembering too much about my life. I think it's good that I could forget some things because I think it'd be too.
I'll be here to remind you, though.
Well, what's funny is, so one of my best friends, the guy I write songs with, we've been writing songs together since 1982, right? And he remembers everything. And I joke with him because we wrote songs together, but we recorded them too, right? That's kind of our thing. And he had a reel to reel when we first were recording, and then he had an 8-track with the tape cassette thing, and then he had more. So I always joke with him. I said, the reason you remember everything is because your real best friend is a tape recorder. But he does. He remembers everything. He'll say something to me and I'll laugh at it because I think it's funny. And he'll say, and I maybe I'll even ask him, where did, Where'd you hear that, or where'd you come up with that? He said, you said that 20 years ago. It's like, no, I don't remember that. He said, yeah, you did.
You don't remember most of this podcast.
No, I don't.
I had somebody the other day was like, "You still doing the podcast?" And I was like, "Yeah." They were like super impressed over 14 years. And I'm like, "It just means we've recorded something and stuck it on the internet. Like, it's not like we've built a media empire. We objectively have fewer listeners every year than,
Well, it's yeah, and
And I'm
it's
happy to do it, but I don't exactly consider it a major accomplishment.
no, I mean it mostly just means we've been friends this whole time. Lots of people are friends with someone
No,
for
there's definitely a chunk in the middle I was not friends with you. Like, I kept the show going, but definitely not
Okay.
in middle years in there. See, go back, people, and see if you can figure out which years I was not friends with William, and then put it on the blog.
Well, I was friends with you, so
ImagineStarringHat.com.
maybe you weren't
Yeah,
friends with me,
obviously.
but I
Obviously.
was friends with you.
I mean, no question. I mean, you had to have one.
Yeah, what was I gonna do?
But see if you can tell where I'm not friends with him. I'll give you a hint. It is a 3 year span. Give me beginning and end dates within 6 months, and you will win an internet point. So see if you can check that down. All right. Also, please write in. We had stuff today, but William was just a chatty Cathy today. He had a lot to say, mostly about Ghostbusters, but some about satire, but mostly Ghostbusters. I would highly recommend the American Society for Magical Negroes is on Peacock, and I'm sorry about that, but what are you gonna do? But yeah, write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com, so we'll talk about your stuff instead of Ghostbusters. Or in addition to, maybe your email is Ghostbusters adjacent. I don't know. You do you. Also go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, if it's up and running. It wasn't up and running this morning. And see what that's about. And give us your thoughts on how long I haven't been friends with William. Yeah.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.